Hi everybody, how are you doing? You know something? Yeah, I know. I'm rubbish at editing, to be fair. So otherwise, that bit of the Born This Way would have just faded, but it didn't. But it come to a crushing stop. But you know something in life, when someone comes out as trans, life can come to a crushing stop, can't it? Anyway, this is episode 6 of my Trans Reflections. And this is something that I should have done quite a while ago, to be honest with you. It's like, well, it's February when I had my surgery, back end of February, and I had 12 weeks of recovery after my surgery, and then I've had a lot to process. So whilst I was wanting to do one of these a long time ago, to be fair, you know, because it has been a little while, I felt as if I had to maybe get to where I am now to be able to do it. If that makes sense. Right, so let's go back. So I mentioned previously getting the surgery for me, because I'd already like very well socially transitioned, that for me getting the surgery was literally the icing on the cake, if you will, in my life. It meant that I could actually be me without. A lot of my dysphoria was around like not having the surgery and all that type of stuff. So I went and had my surgery. I went down to Brighton, and it wasn't the best experience, if I'm totally honest with you, with the nurses, because I'm plant-based and they give me chicken soup. And there was one nurse there who was quite nasty, to be honest with you. And but you know, it's like it is what it is. You know, I mean, like apart from those two situations, it was perfect. And you know, in life sometimes, you know, you've just got to, I don't know, take the good with the bad maybe. But still, I had my surgery. I woke up, and when I come out of surgery, you know, because I was really scared to go into surgery, because I'd never had surgery before in my life. And I thought to myself, I thought, you know, like my best friend, a girl called Julie, passed away aged 38, while she was having an operation, to be fair. You know, it's like she didn't come out with the anaesthetic. So I had all that going on in my head, and I was thinking to myself, I was thinking, you know something, I might not even wake up from this. And like, even that said, even that was going on in my mind, going forward for my surgery, for me, was the option that I needed to take, because if my life was going to mean anything to me, I needed to be me. And I'm just so grateful that the health service was able to sort of facilitate that. You know, I'm not saying it's brilliant with the health service, because obviously I know some of the people listening to this might be on a 2 or 3 or even longer years wait to even get to your first appointment, and my heart goes out to each and every one of yous. My journey took 9 years from actually coming out as trans and getting referred to the gender clinic, to actually completing my medical transition with my surgery. And I remember back in the day, you know, hey, back in the day, I remember back in the day that sort of, once I knew the truth within myself, it was impossible to unknow the truth within myself. So for me, that meant I pretty much had to come out as trans, and that brought in physical attacks, verbal abuse, sexual assaults. You know, it was an absolute nightmare of a time for me. And I always name check Anthony Young at this point, because Anthony Young from TPA at the time, the support that man gave me, I feel now made the big difference. I truly do. You know, absolute legend of a man. Anyway, moving forward. So I come out of my surgery, and I actually felt gender euphoria. I never knew what that feeling would feel like until I actually came out of surgery, and I just felt freed. I felt freed of the whole like shackles of physically not representing who I felt I was. You know, thing is, in this life, being your authentic self is actually a massive victory. Whoever, whether you are identifying as male or female, or anywhere in between or beyond, around the non-binary side of things. You know, because in this life, if we're going to move forward in this life, we really have to remember that. You know, and I remember a few years ago, Like, there's lots of stuff in the news about, like, not stereotyping our boys and girls. You know, like, so, like, boys will play with guns and stuff like that, and girls would dream of marrying a doctor rather than being one. So getting rid of all of those stereotypes, that's not a negative thing either, is it? But these days, around the trans issues, it seems the gender critical people seem to be wanting to buy into the stereotypes, you know, and I swear. Anyway, moving forward, 'cause this is about stuff to do with my transition, and like it's the end of my road. When I come out, I work for myself, and when I come out of hospital, you know, I'd actually, you know, I lost 4 stone last year to get to my surgery, and then when I came out of hospital, I actually lost about another 10 pounds while I was in hospital. So, you know, so I was looking slim, I was feeling fit and everything. But even though I was feeling fine, I realised that I had to have my time of recovery. And the recovery isn't just physical recovery. There's an emotional recovery from the life almost. And when I say that, I didn't realise pre-surgery how much I would have to process post-surgery. You know, I mean, I will go around the country delivering awareness talks in this area, and I realise now that me post-surgery, I'm so much better equipped now to do what I'm doing because I've got the experience of the entire journey. You know, and as a human being as well, I can speak from personal experience on that journey. So when I'm looking at this, you know, I was recovering. It wasn't pretty. Do you know what I mean? Because you've got to, every day you've got to be doing your maintenance and stuff. And as we said before, there's different options around surgery. You know, and like the different options mean different types of recoveries needed. But whichever type you need, you still need to be doing all of your hippie scrub and all of that type of stuff. You know, even if you're not doing the dilating. And like, I remember me mate Terry come round, you know. And like she's the only person, I mean Emma. I used to get Emma to check it for me every day to make sure it looked okay, because you can't really tell yourself, can you? You know what I mean? So, but like my mate Terry was the only person to actually come round to visit me. Who was like, oh, well, then let's have a look. Bless her. So you know, I mean, I said no, no one is anywhere. So there's only pretty much Emma and Terry who've seen it. And like to be honest with you, like you know, from an aesthetic viewpoint, anyone worried about how things look after surgery, you know, I really couldn't be happier. I really couldn't. And the first thing I noticed, you know, as I was coming out of recovery, was I started to lose a sort of an emotional, mental memory connection with me pre-surgery, if that makes sense. I'm now, what, 5 months on, 4 months on from surgery, and I literally can't remember what it was like before surgery. You know, physically, I just can't. It just feels foreign to me. It truly does. And that's something I'm actually really pleased about, if I'm honest with you. But processing things, you know. Oh, by the way, I mentioned, I know I ramble, I know. Just go with it. So I remember, you know, they give me a 10-week sick note, but I work for myself, and what am I supposed to do? Give myself a sick note, you know? If I didn't do any work for 10 weeks, then I'm not even sure what business I'd have left, you know? So I tried to carry on to the best of my ability because girls got rent to pay, you know, and just move forward. And bit by bit, it was okay. But I realised when I was doing a training session or something on Zoom or something like that, once I'd done the session, I'd have to go and have a lie down for an hour. You know, because it was just, I used to find it mentally just tiring. It does take time to recover, and we need to be kind to ourselves in the recovery process. We really do. We need to make sure that we follow all of the guidelines that are put about us, because I'll tell you now, when you have your surgery, you know, you sat there and you think to yourself, oh, actually, I feel fine. Everything's okay. I'll just do this. I'll just do this. And because the surgery is right at the base of your being, if you will, then like it's almost as if because you've got your arms and your legs around you, and you're sort of, you're not feeling as if there's any like negative aspects around your recovery. But then if you push yourself too much, you can have real problems, you know. And I mean, I remember I was speaking with Emma before, and Emma went on a bike ride when she was in recovery, and she ended up regretting it. You know, you've got to wait until you're healed before you actually start fully immersing yourself back in life. But you know something? We've been sort of, I think, like, I was 45-year-old when I was come out as trans. I was 54-year-old earlier this year when I had my surgery. So I'd be really, really silly if I was thinking to myself that I'm going to be fine and I'll be recovered in a week. You know, there's a lot of damage and there's a lot of things to process within a person's self as well. This internalized transphobia thing I mentioned previously, you know, it's real. And the internalized transphobia is a thing that, because I didn't come out until I was 45-year-old, I had to buy into the whole worldview on how trans people shouldn't exist. And that's not a good place to be. You know, that just, if you're dealing with dysphoria and you're dealing with dysphoria well, and you're just living in the gender that you're assigned at birth, then it doesn't surprise me that because you're repressing truths within yourself, you'll oppress things within others. For instance, I was a parent who was, I had nothing against gay people or lesbians or trans people, but when I was oppressing things within myself, I had loads of, by the way, I'll qualify that statement with letting you know that I've always had lots of lesbian, gay, bi, trans friends. Always. But when I was sort of like oppressing things within myself, it was easy for me to think that my children wouldn't be gay. You know, it'd be okay if they were, I wouldn't disown them. But in my mind, I was thinking, well, of course they're not going to be gay. And I think that's because when I was repressing things within myself, I found it easy to oppress things within others. Sometimes being honest with myself, is a good thing. You know, it really is. Moving forward, and yeah, I think to myself now, you know, that internalized transphobia, I don't feel it's there as much to the extent. But then again, my mind has been taken over with something else. And that's coming to terms with everything. So, after my surgery, once I'd physically recovered, I started having sort of like, I started revisiting some of the processes and the thoughts and stuff that I was having pre-surgery. Because I always say the truth stands up to all shades of light. So I always actively questioned myself because I didn't want to go down the road that wasn't mine. I don't know why anyone would want to go down a road that isn't theirs. So when I'm going through this process of sort of re-evaluating everything, but from a post-surgery perspective, I realise now that without that internalised transphobia, I sort of see the world in a slightly different way. I sort of see like all of the things that I went through, I had to reprocess them again. I mean, that doesn't mean I'm not trans or anything like that, because like I have some basic truths in my life. You know, one of them is I'm a person of faith. One of them is I'm from mixed race heritage. And the other one is that I'm trans. I feel they're the three cornerstones of my life that pretty much, you know, are part of my building blocks. But with the trans side of things, you know, and not having the extra dysphoria of not having had my surgery, I found my life to be very freeing. But the understanding of actually having to reprocess everything was real. It truly was. And a big part of that was reprocessing my relationship with my mother. You see, me and my mum always got on really well. We truly did. I thought the absolute world of my mother. And I think because I wasn't able to talk to her, because I wasn't able to truly tell her how I was feeling inside when I was a very small child, then life got in the way and it just got thrown under the bus like everything else in my life. Then I was never able to tell her, and the further you walk away from your truth, the harder it is to get back to it. Which is why I always say hats off to those who do transition later in life. Because overcoming everything to cross the Rubicon, that's one remarkable thing to do, it really is. So anyway, I realised to myself that, like, when I was growing up, because obviously my mum loved me, obviously she did. Because I wasn't able to be my full self in my mother's eyes, then I felt this sort of detachment. And like almost like a yearning or a longing for that real connection. And then my mum passed away 2 years before I actually came out as trans. So she never had chance to know me. And don't get me wrong, I'm pretty certain she would have been dead against me transitioning at the beginning, dead against it. But you know something, I also know that once she'd realised that who I am is actually me, she would have fought tooth and nail for my right to exist. I know that for sure. I truly do. But it's made me realise some of the triggers in my life. Maybe it's part of the reason why I sort of do as much as I do. Maybe I'm seeking that sort of affirmation that I never really was able to seek from my mother. You know, Freud says it all comes back to your mother, doesn't it, in the end, you know what I mean? And, like, I do sort of feel as if, like, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I never really cried much over my mother before transition. I've cried a lot more tears since I actually came out as me. And since my surgery, I've had to process that much. There's been absolute oceans of tears over my mother. So all of the repressed grief and longing has all happened, had to come out as well. So I feel as if, you know, when, like, for me going through this surgery part of things, it's sort of like it opened a new can of worms in some respects. But in others, it just feels as if this was my journey all along, you know. And like the relationship with my mother, I understand that that's maybe shaped me into the caring person that I am today, who always fights for the underdog, because my mum always fought for the underdog as well, you know. And just moving forward. Now, in life, you know, like, these were the processes I've had over the past few months. And I've made a point of not going to the doctors, because I feel as if it's a natural process of me and part of my recovery, if you will. But what it's left me with, it's left me with a realisation. You see, over the years, I know sometimes I've been the pebble in the shoe. I know I have. I know I've spoke up when I've felt things aren't right, because I believe we need to speak out, think out and act out for social change. So when we think out is we see something that's actually that's not right. So then we speak out. Like Laurie Hall Sanderson in the book Speak says, if you don't speak, how are you going to change anything? And when you act out, you're living your full self. And I can think of that over time, like when there was that non-binary mannequin called Kennedy, you know, and like I said, look, you know, you can't put a burqa on a mannequin and call it your Islamic mascot. You can't put it in a wheelchair and call it your disabled mascot. So why can you dress it in clothes from the Gap and call it your non-binary mascot? You know, some of these points that I've raised in the past, I've maybe raised them in a sense of maybe more confrontational than actually collaborational. So I've realised that within myself as well. You know, so I feel as if it's helped me to grow as a person. You know, so now when I have any things that I need to speak out, think out and act out about, I feel as if I'm going to be coming to them from a much more collaborative viewpoint, without actually not shying away from what I'm trying to put across, you know. And like there's quite a few of those situations, to be fair, but I'm not going to bore you with them here, because that's going to be in its own, I swear. You know, There's such a dark underbelly in the voluntary sector. I think it could do with its own it could do with its own podcast, to be fair. But that's for another day. So, personal growth. You know, I go through my surgery and then I think to myself, you know, right now I'm here, now what? Now what? And now I've got to live in peace. And now I've got to just be happy with me and get on with my life. But I've had 45 to 54 years of living in a war zone. So I realise that it's going to maybe take a little bit of time to actually find comfort in that peaceful space. Because when you're a survivor as well, you're used to that knee-jerk pinball reaction to getting over today. Get over the day you're in and worry about tomorrow, tomorrow. Whereas now, actually, I feel as if I just need to sort of enjoy the peace that's within me and move forward and focus on me. You know, I put 2 stone on post-surgery. Be careful post-surgery, because when you can't move around and when you can eat what you want, you know, chocolate becomes your best friend again. So I managed to, I went to Slimming World last week, worked a couple of weeks ago, got back to the groups. And I put 2 stone on since surgery. Anyway, in the first week, because I'm back on it and I've got my focus back, and now my focus is towards me. I'm not bothered what other people do. And I'm not bothered what other people think of me either. I'm bothered about me, and I'm bothered about my peace of mind, and I'm bothered about my friends. You know, it's like, you know, when we say about, like, you let people in, you sometimes you put your heart into things and some people just stamp all over you. And it does it, it can turn your heart into a fortress. And I feel that's what it's done for me. So I think as time's gone on, it's turned my heart into a fortress, and some people I keep safe within it. And from a self-care viewpoint, some people I keep outside. I've learned the art of discernment. I've learned that I don't need to seek other people's acceptance to be me. I've learned that by seeking other people's acceptance to be me, I'm pretty much just living a life in chattels. Living a life of who people say I can be. And the truth of the matter is, me and you, everybody, and this is regardless of whether you're trans, lesbian, gay, bisexual, intersex, there's an essence of you. And I feel as if I've found, like, the complete me through this process. So moving forward, you know, I just feel as if I'm so much more equipped to tackle life than I was pre-surgery, even though I felt I was fully transitioned, you know. And I understand some people don't have surgery and don't want surgery, and that's their choice, you know. And, like, I'm not saying that you have to have surgery to be validated as a trans person, because I understand not everyone's able to, and also understand not everybody wants to. I also understand there's thousands of men in this world right now with a gender recognition certificate, which gives them a birth certificate that says male, that don't have a penis. I understand there's thousands of women in the UK that have a gender recognition certificate, which actually gives them a birth certificate that says female, legally, that don't have a vagina. I recognise that some men bleed as well. Period poverty affects men as well as women, when you look at trans men, in that sense, because a lot of trans men pass a lot easier than trans women, people think they have it easier. Period poverty affects trans men, I would suggest, more than it does anybody. But these are things that we don't talk about. So, like, issues like this, raising issues like this, I feel as if I'm in a better place to do this now. And, you know, with through this Trans Reflections podcast, I've realised that I'm just one voice. And I've been blessed, you know, with my podcasts. If you have a look at some of the other ones, I've done a Trans Reflections podcast. No, I've done a Community Matters podcast, or Inclusion Matters podcast, with a trans Buddhist monk, with a trans firefighter. Do you know what I mean? I'm always up for speaking with people to talk about life and their life. And you can come on anonymously as well. You know, we don't need to put your name or your picture or anything, but we'd just like to have some open chats, because if we can get some open chats out there and we can see other people's perspectives of life, then we can maybe start realizing that this world is a big jigsaw, and each one of us is a piece in this jigsaw, and each one of us needs to be our full glorious self for that massive picture to be the best picture in the world, the most beautiful, bright, inclusive picture where all the colours are showing. And that's what I'd like to do as well. So if you would like to have a chat with me, give me a shout. Drop me an email. My personal email is ellielowther21@gmail.com. My work email is ellie@essentiallearningcurve.com or ellie@learntogrow.me. It's one of those things, you know, where I just feel as if I have had to go through the entire process to get to where I am today, and nowhere within that entire process did I have the clarity of mind that I have today. When I was going through my transition, you know, I always shied away from personal relationships, and there was all, like, there was very, very few occasions. And that was because of the dysphoria I had around my body. And that's gone now. You know, so like now I feel as if I'm really open to relationships. But that taps in another thing, doesn't it? Because post-operative trans women, to the general public, they still carry the baggage of who they used to be. So it makes them, like, partners become more of a niche thing rather than a regular thing. And that's okay with me as well, because years ago I used to be in bad relationships just for the sake of being in a relationship. Now, no way. My best relationship is with me, and if anybody ends up being in my life in a personal sense, then that person would be a remarkable person, because they would be with me unashamedly. It wouldn't be a case of I'll come round the house but I'll not walk up the street with you, as a lot of us experience, don't we? You know, it'd be somebody who was securing themselves to understand that they could be with somebody regardless of, like, you know, the trans history, and they could see you as the person you actually are. I understand that's a small catchment of people in this world, but you know something? I think I'd rather have quality over quantity any time, absolutely any time. There's so much to process, you know, and it's very maturing in some ways. You know, when like for me, going through surgery has made me sort of reevaluate so many things in my life, and now I'm really sort of like, I feel blessed to know that I've completed my physical journey and I'm now moving forward into the rest of my life. And, you know, I say to people, you know, my mum passed away when she was 73, and when I was growing up, I never thought I'd get past 37. Whereas now, I feel really healthy, so I think I'll get to 73. But that's only, what, 18 years? That's less than 7,000 days, isn't it? Something like that, around that area. I understand I have a finite amount of time on this planet, especially with us going through the pandemic. You know, it's like, it's just, it's, you know, our mortality is brought into focus, isn't it? So from that perspective, I try and make every day count. But every day, I get to be me. And if I ended up living for another 2 weeks and then just dropping down dead of a heart attack or something, then I'd want people to be happy for me, because I've got over everything in life. I've climbed the mountains, I've been in the valleys, I've seen the darkness, and I've seen the light. And now I'm at the end of my journey. I can find that peacefulness and rest within to actually set off onto the last leg, if you will, and just move forward in my life as my true, authentic self. So if you met me before, even pre-surgery, and we've not met or we've not seen each other since the pandemic hit us, you know, hiya, I'm Ellie. I'm pleased to meet you. And I feel as if moving forward, I feel as if there's a lot of good things ahead. There's a lot of possibilities. There's a lot of positivity. And I can see these a lot more now that I'm no longer holding my own self back with my own internalized transphobia. So, anyone I've disagreed with in the past, you know, let's draw lines, let's move forward. Any issues, concerns, anything like that, give me a shout. Let's talk about them openly and honestly, because the truth stands up to all shades of light. But everybody else who wants to go on this journey of actually, you know, being in a person's life who's gone through a full transition, I think everyone needs to get over their own things as well, because you're actually talking with somebody who's their true authentic self, who's had to battle and fight every step of the way to actually exist in this world. And if that's you, then you have my utmost respect, absolute respect.
And coming to that, this is my last podcast for Trans Reflections. And what I'm saying that is, it's not my last podcast for Trans Reflections for me. Actually, it is. Is it? Hang on a second. Yes, okay, right, rewind. Right, so this is my last Trans Reflections where I talk about my journey. So I'd like to throw it open. And because I feel there's so much ambiguity, there's so much out there where people assume different things. But I know each person's journey is their own individual journey. And seriously, anybody who steps out of like the world as their true authentic self when they begin to socially transition, whether that's binary or non-binary, like please give me a shout. And let's do a Trans Reflections podcast where we talk about your life. Because I think it's so important. Because I'd like the wider world to understand some of the struggles and some of the victories that we face. Because for me, people going through transition are the most resilient people I know. And I feel we need to do more to get more authentic voices out there. You know, we need to speak for ourselves. So give me a shout, drop me an email, elliot@essentiallearningcurve.com, and we can do a Zoom call. And if you're far away, and I can get the audio off it, don't worry, you don't have to use your video or anything like that, because I'm a radio head. And, you know, let's get some perspectives out there. I've decided that the perspectives I've already got that are up on like Trans Matters and Community Matters podcasts, I'm gonna get rid of those and I'm gonna reintroduce them as Trans Reflections podcasts. So Trans Reflections podcast 7 will be Serena's story. If you want to have a chat with me about your transition, about some of the things that you faced, some of the victories, some of the defeats, and some of the feelings around the journey, please get in touch with me. And it'll go out as a podcast with just your first name on. And we'll just have a chat. Take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Because, you know, in an inclusive world, it's more of a journey than a destination. But we can't even get anywhere meaningful if we leave anyone behind. Stay safe, everybody.